The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Inspired Inventor Sachs. This is it! The last time we get to brew in MH3.
That's true. You know, I feel like, I mean, maybe we can, I should save this till after the 50 takes are over, but I feel like I'm gonna pull a line out of your book and say, Bloomborough, you're on notice. I mean, I didn't even really like MH3 that much, to be honest, but like, you get to do some really cool stuff in this format.
Oh, and yeah, you did. I just played a sweet Esper brew on MTGO prior to recording. Had Essence Reliquary plus the Tamiyo's Saga to pick that up every turn to give my opponents -2/-0. Some draw three stuff going on with some Sneaky Snack. It was a juicy Esper deck built around Essence Reliquary. I had Chthonian Nightmare, too. It was a ton of fun to play.
I still haven't gotten to play Chthonian Nightmare.
Oh, you're missing out then. You need to be drafting this format up until Bloomborough comes out.
Okay.
Chthonian Nightmare is real good.
I tell you what, I definitely need to be drafting it over Vintage Cube because I am just atrocious at drafting Vintage Cube.
Are you washed or are you just trying too hard to brew?
I think I might be trying too hard to brew. I also think I don't know. I got to just get back on my LSV videos, I think, because I just feel like I don't know the cards that matter. And so I'm like, I often end up taking cheap stuff, because I'm always that's the thing. I'm always feel like that's the choke point, is getting your cheap stuff, and then I feel like I have nothing that wins me any games. And so I'm just
I don't know if that's true. There's a lot of four drops that are real good that are a cut above the rest. There's some four drops that are,
that's what I'm saying, but I don't know which those are.
Yeah, I've been watching the LSV videos nonstop. Pretty much the last 2 months solid, I think I've watched almost all of them.
Look at you.
LSV, in for the Vintage Cube.
LSV, who is not listening to this podcast, we got your number one fan right here. so we are going to be sending off Modern Horizons 3 in Lords of Limited fashion. We've got 50 takes in 50 minutes. It's a great way for us to send off the format, which I truly can't believe is already gone. I mean, I guess it's weird because, if you think of it as a supplementary set, which it kind of is, then it's not that crazy that we, had it for just a few weeks. But it's also the summer set.
Everything's odd. It's because there's double. They're doing the Midnight Hunt Crimson Bower thing, because it's Bloomborough and Duskmourne or something, right? They're both of those are coming out prior to Christmas, I think.
Okay. Yeah, well, you don't have Bloomborough from August to January. Yeah, we definitely have something to break that up. But that's fine. That's still only four sets this year plus MH3, which is, it's all fine. Everything's fine. Everything's great. There's always cubes happening. We're good. It's just,
well, anything, there's too much content. That's what I was just thinking about today, is we're already getting ready to go into Crash Course season. There's so much compiling to do. All these new formats coming out.
It's a little relentless, it feels like. And we don't have to deal with the Assassin's Creed or Secret Lair or any and all that other stuff. So what we are dealing with today is sending off Modern Horizons 3. So we have 50 takes. That's how we say goodbye to a format, synthesize it, summarize it. And that's also a great episode if you're returning to it, if you never drafted the format, if they're flashing it back or whatever, or if you just need a quick hit. This is the episode for you. So we'll do some housekeeping, then dive in to the list. First things first is the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free. We have some great perks over at the Patreon. I said it last week, I'll say it again this week, that new set season, which is, of course, any time of day, any time of week is new set season these days. The Discord, which is what people who give back via the Patreon get access to, is the best place on the internet. It's a really, really fantastic community. It was fun to get to cheer on some folks who were competing in the PT a couple weeks ago. But it's just great when a new set is released. You know, you just feel that hype. You feel the hype a little bit, maybe by yourself, but you really feel the hype in the Discord of people getting excited about cards, shooting their shot with, this is going to be the top whatever, this is going to be the top common, uncommon. That's all really, really fun. Get to participate in that. And then, you know, people are compiling their tier lists, people are doing practice drafts. It's great.
The other thing that was really cool to see in the Discord was the Arena Direct stuff. We didn't really get to chat about that because it kind of snuck up on me. Did you do any Arena Direct runs?
I did. I did three, and I went 3-2 in all of them. And I was like, I can't do MH3 sealed best of one anymore. I just didn't have it in me.
Yeah, it was tough. I only did one run, really. I registered for two, but my second run was cut short because I was driving back from Pittsburgh to Jasper in the middle of the night. So I did my one run. I also went 3-2 with my one run. I wish I had had more time that weekend because those events are a blast. But it was cool seeing everybody's builds and, you know, seeing the hype about getting their box of MH3. It was awesome to see in the Discord.
Yeah, I was complained isn't the right word, but I was telling you that I was feeling like, well, I mean, they're right over there. I have my two Festival in a Box wins, you know, because everyone's like, these are like $250. I was like, oh, great. I'm going to like, whatever. I dropped, I don't know, $200 to do it. I have air quotes $500 worth of product in my room right now. But like, am I going to realize that value? Listeners, if anyone wants a discount, I'll pay for shipping. If you want some Vegas Festival in a Boxes, you hit me up via our Discord, which you get access to via the Patreon, bringing it around full circle there. We're recording actually a couple days after our last episode, so no new patrons to shout out. We'll get a full list next week, but it's a great time to get to say thank you, thank you, thank you to all of our past, present, and future patrons.
As well as all of our listeners. You all are awesome. We have the best community. Very blessed.
Truly, truly very blessed. All right, Ben, should we get 50 minutes on the clock?
Let's do it.
All right, starting off with point number one, Modern Horizons 3 is a synergy-driven format. Evaluating cards in a vacuum really didn't work here. I think I might have this point a little later on, but I think this was a really hard set if you relied on game and hand win rate a lot for your pick orders.
I looked at the data once after the first week of data, as per usual for me. But even more than that, too, I was drafting again today, and you just really have to make sure cards are in the right home. Like, you have to set the cards up for success. If you're not actively working to do that, you're just leaving so much equity on the table in this format.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of points, I think, on this list that slot into this or are going to sound similar to this. You know, thinking about synergy, cards in the right home, ceilings versus floors. There's a lot of like finicky little knobs that you want to be turning during the draft in Modern Horizons 3.
Well, but comparing this to OTJ, for example, like there was so much raw power in OTJ. There's not, I mean, there is raw power in MH3, but you have to work to make the stuff powerful, or you do have to put the right surrounding cast around the powerful cards to really make them powerful. There's not just Bonnie Pauls running around everywhere in MH3.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Number two, it was imperative that you found an open lane during the draft to get powerful synergies late for an uncontested archetype.
Yeah, I mean, so much of what I think I'll remember about this format is pivoting or understanding how to pivot or what the off ramps were for pivoting, because I do think, like, you know, I'll remember my train wrecks a lot from this format of like not doing the off ramp or grabbing hold of an archetype thinking it was open and then it not. And like, I feel like I needed to learn from that. And so I think it's going to, you know, I always have in the back of my head when we do these episodes, the people who are maybe going to come back and listen to it and draft Modern Horizons 3 for the first time. And I say, I pour one out for those people a little bit, because I'm like, I don't know how you can do that. You really have, you get your sea legs a little bit in this format after, you know, a dozen drafts.
Yeah, I train wrecked for the first time today, I think, like really, truly train wrecked. I didn't quite make playables. I tried to pivot into green-white counters, and I think I did the right thing, but I don't think the packs really broke my way in pack 3, which was, I was like waffling pretty hard through pack 2. It was tough, but I think doing that type of thing, and if you know what you're doing, you know, taking flyers on those Riddlegate gargoyles or the faithful watchdogs or whatever that are going around the table too late. If you do truly find the open lane, I think you're going to get rewarded more often than not in this format.
Number three, Modern Horizons 3 is a format where you can really cook. And I feel this in the deepest part of my bones that, like, there's just so much there for you. It's such a playground of, like, there's build arounds, there's lots of, like, cross archetype synergies. There's obviously, like, streamline synergies. There's archetypes that do what they say, but then there's also, like, secret modes. Like, there's red black artifacts, but there's also red black steel and sack. There's, like, blue black draw three, but there's also blue black controller, blue black reanimator. Like, you can do a lot of stuff in this format, but you have to, like, know how to do that stuff in the format, you know?
Yes, definitely. I was just thinking that today while I was playing with Chthonian Nightmare was they were so close to being so much more to do with Reanimator. It somehow just never quite came all the way together, but I really wanted Victimize to be awesome.
And why wasn't Victimize awesome?
I don't know. It should be, by all rights.
Yes, I have the same exact thought about that card. Like, I really think it should be busted, especially, like, in conjunction with, I felt like there was Reanimator stuff to be done with the cycling Eldrazi, right? You, like, two in a green, two in a blue, like, cycle it and then reanimate a 7/7. And somehow that, like, wasn't quite good enough a lot of the time.
That's because people just cast Writhing Chrysalis and it was bigger than those cards.
Yeah, for sure.
Number four, your goal when cooking in Modern Horizons 3 was to do things that feel fundamentally broken. So think tune the narrative into an amped raptor and then play a three or a four drop for free off your energy, or ramping Writhing Chrysalis into a seven drop, sacking those Eldrazi spawn and then growing your Chrysalis, or casting Faithful Watchdog, the 3/3 has +1/+1 counters on it, into Fangs of Colonia to turn it into an 8/8 vigilance attacking the following turn. There were a lot of really nasty things you could do in some of the streamlined archetypes.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty cool that I'm looking at, like, Tune the Narrative into Amped Raptor, and, like, both of those we're seeing play in Modern currently. Ramp into Chrysalis, not quite, but, like, it's got some, you know, like, the ramp you can do with that kind of stuff feels, like, Tron-y. And so it's cool that you kind of got some Modern, like, Modern constructed flavors in Modern Horizons 3 Limited with that sort of stuff. That was a big one.
Absolutely.
Number five, Writhing Chrysalis is a big cost of doing business in the format. And I think I'm finally, you know, we did a lot of tempered takes about Writhing Chrysalis. And I think those takes are warranted. And I think I'm just letting my inner grump come out tonight. And I'm going to say I'm kind of on the side of it being format ruining, honestly.
I disagree completely.
I know you do.
For draft, I do not see it for draft. Sealed?
Maybe
absolutely.
Sealed. Maybe
absolutely sealed. For sealed. For draft, I don't buy it. There's so many ways to beat that card and to do more powerful things than that card offers. Now, when your opponent goes 2-drop into Chrysalis, into Titan's Vanguard or whatever, those starts are really hard to beat. But that's not that much different than a busted energy start or a busted artifact start. I mean, it's really good and it's tough to beat, but the tools are there.
Yeah. I mean, my feelings aside, just like it's the most busted common we've ever seen. Probably, like, I mean, we've ever seen in lifetime of our podcast, it's probably the most busted common. I'm sure some true Magic boomers would tell us, like, back in my day we had Sprout Swarm or Pestilence or whatever, but, like, Writhing Chrysalis is truly on another level. And it's just you I think whatever we're going to remember about the format, the masses are going to remember that card as when they think of Modern Horizons 3 Limited.
Sure, that's what I will remember when I think Modern Horizons 3 Limited also, but I do think it can train wreck some drafts. Like, you really do still need to put it in the right home to maximize it. If you're just splashing for a rando Writhing Chrysalis, it'll be fine to good, but not great. Like, it needed to be in red, green, or Temur Eldrazi with the follow-up stuff to truly be outstanding.
Yeah.
Speaking of, number six, red, green, Eldrazi was the best deck off the back of Chrysalis, Titan's Vanguard, and a host of powerful Eldrazi.
Yeah. I mean, and shout out to us for calling this after. I mean, why not? You know, we get to do whatever we want to do. It's our show. But I think we really pegged this early and it bore out to be the case. I mean, Titan's Vanguard is just, Chrysalis is really pushed, but Titan's Vanguard is also really pushed. It's so much power and toughness. not only just immediately, but then threatens for more and more. Though I think you never really get the "and more," because usually if they attack with it and it's not like ending the game, like you're probably just conceding.
Yep, for sure.
Number 7, energy decks got there in a big way. I have red white aggro energy, blue white aggro energy, and blue red, which was more like Jeskai. Like, I don't know if you like, I feel like blue red leaned more control, and so then you were often able to splash some white there. Were great ways to use this extra resource. And I think kudos to WotC for like having the courage to go back and like dip back into the energy well, which they really kind of screwed up the first time around. It was too busted. And I think they really got it right, at least for limited.
Certainly for limited. And I think obviously in an eternal format, it's going to be a lot less broken than it was in standard. But I do think, I mean, if you're coming back to the format, it's Eldrazi as tier number one synergies, I think, to go after, and energy not far behind. I mean, those were definitely the two headlining mechanics in a big, big, big way for this format.
I was streaming for, you know, I think I haven't streamed that much for this format, but the other day, and someone, I was talking, bemoaning my feelings about Writhing Chrysalis, and I was like, I do feel like I could get that card out of here and feel a lot better about the format. And then someone was like, you get Writhing Chrysalis out, and then like red white is just like far and away the best deck. And I don't know if that's...
energy just runs rampant without Writhing Chrysalis.
That is kind of the case, right? It's the purple people eater, but you kind of need it otherwise. And it plus the back of whatever else the Eldrazi are doing that's powerful to support the Chrysalis. But if you don't have that, then the energy decks are really good. And they're so plentiful, right? You can have so many at the table. Like, we would probably just be in, especially at high up in the ladder, you would just be in energy mirrors all the time.
I mean, sign me up. I love playing with and against that archetype.
You're disgusting.
Number 8. The modified wedge fell flat, which was Abzan. Modified just didn't really get there because it was kind of at odds with itself. You know, Temur Eldrazi was very cohesive. Jeskai Energy was very cohesive. But modified, in addition to being the least powerful of those three, also had different flavors, right? Like, there was +1/+1 counter modified, and there was like the aura enchantment modified. And mixing and matching didn't work super well.
Aura enchantment just never, like, it just didn't get there at all. Like,
I don't know, Lion Umbra or whatever it is that gets +3/+3. I beat down some people with that today. Card's hard to deal with.
I don't know. I beg to disagree. I think that card is pretty mopey and so hard to set up. But I guess, like, hard to set up if you're not, if, like, go back to point number one or two on this list or whatever, and you're drafting a deck where all your cards aren't in the right home and Lion Umbra's there, you're going to have a bad time. But yeah.
The thing that is odd about that deck is oftentimes, like, for example, you're going Faithful Watchdog into Lion Umbra or something. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, can you beat it? And if they have bounce or if they have something, you probably lose. And if they don't, you probably win. But there is a lot of interaction that hoses the green white, like all in on one creature type of strategy, a Cursed Marauder looking at you.
Yeah. I feel like green white as pure aggro, like if you were ignoring synergies, green white as pure aggro worked. But like green white as a synergy counters thing, I think didn't. Black green didn't really work. And I like black white, but like for finicky, fussy decks, not like, I just don't think you want to really be doing the air quotes modified thing. You know, black white I think of as a control deck with Essence Reliquary and a Cursed Marauders or whatever. I don't think of it as black white modified or black white counters, whatever.
Well, some of the problem with Abzan was it just fell in no man's land in the format, right? It lost the end game to Eldrazi, and it lost the early game or the mid game to energy. Like, it just was in a weird spot in the types of turns it was trying to win the game on.
Number 9, which leaves us with red-black artifacts and blue-black draw 3 were good decks, but a little riskier to draft because there wasn't an easy off-ramp. Yeah, I feel like my train wrecks were red-black. Like, feeling like I'm going to start red black and hold on, or like pivot in for a late cranial ram, and then it just like doesn't come together. But it's so hard to know, like, where do you go? And like those were the decks that those are the easiest cuts. You know, you see someone submitting a black green deck or something, and then they have this like tiny artifacts package, and you're like, well, just cut that. Like, your refurbished familiars aren't coming down before turn 4. your arc-bound Condor isn't doing anything. Like, just get it out of there. It was so anemic in that sense. So, like, when it worked, it was good, but your drafts might blow up in your face a little bit.
Yeah, it was tough. I think for me, for red-black, certainly it was getting deep into red early, and then the black artifacts coming around late. I think that was the safest way to do it. Sometimes I just YOLO'd on a Rish Familiar early or a Terramander early and just went to town. Blue-black, I have not gotten to play quite as much. I've probably only done it once or twice.
Sneaky Snacker's just like such a spirit animal card for me late in the format. Like, I pivot for it so often. I love to, like, my dream, I don't know why, is like Buried Alive, like three Sneaky Snackers, or Buried Alive, like two Sneaky Snackers and a, what's the Razor Transmogrant, the like 1/1 artifact, like, and then lose. But like, I'm just like, yes, the value.
Number 10, if you weren't playing an Eldrazi deck, you really wanted your deck to be synergistically explosive because the Eldrazi decks almost always won the late game. And sometimes the early game too. They had a Writhing Chrysalis draw. Like, sometimes they just smacked you down. But almost always, if you let an Eldrazi deck get to turns 8 through 10 or whatever, they're just burying you in large, powerful cards.
Yeah, and like, yes. And you don't quite know what it's like until you're facing it. Because like, you have this feeling of like, all right, well, they played their big thing. And that's it. Now I'll have to deal with that. But as long as I deal with that, I'll be okay. But then it's just relentless. It's just like, and another, and another. And you're like, how is this possible? But that is how the deck's structured and how it's supposed to play out. And it does work.
I mean, yeah, enough 6/8 reaches and you just don't have attacks anymore. And you really did need cards like the MDFCs that could tap all the opponent's creatures, that made ground creatures unable to block. Like, those were really important to be able to beat the Eldrazi board stalls. Also, the dumbest thing was playing the Eldrazi mirror. I have not done that often, but in quick draft, Eldrazi was pretty open, and I did some quick drafts while I was visiting in Ohio. And just having a bunch of large Eldrazi staring at each other on the board because nobody has any attacks was a miserable play experience.
Do you just deck? Like, how do those games end?
I decked a couple times because I had too many Malevolent Rumbles. I decked at least twice naturally.
So that's why you don't like that card. I see. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Imposter syndrome is something that comes for us all, and it certainly has for me in the past month. It's been hard for me to weather some recent MTG run bads, in addition to seeing so many people who I like to think of as peers having a lot of success.
Comparison is the thief of joy, and it's easy to envy other people's lives or accomplishments. It might look like they have it all on social media, but in reality, they probably don't. Therapy can help you focus on what you want instead of what others have, so you can start living your best life.
I found it extremely helpful to talk to my therapist about these feelings and try to figure out where the imposter syndrome comes from and hopefully have it show up less often.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Stop comparing and start focusing with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. Number 11, the official Lords of Limited archetype power rankings. And there's more than 10 here.
Might be more than 10. I put some wedges in there.
Number 1, red-green Eldrazi Beats.
Number 2, red-white Energy Aggro.
Number 3, Teemer Eldrazi Ramp.
Number 4, Jeskai Energy Engines.
Number 5, Blue-Red Energy.
Number 6, Blue-White Energy.
Number 7, Rakdos Artifacts.
Number 8, Dimir Draw 3.
So funny that you have put, like, you put Blue-Red and Blue-White, and then Rakdos and Dimir. That's just interesting. Speaking of, we have Selesnya Counters Beatdown up next in number 9.
Golgari Counters Grind at number 10.
Grind to an 0-3 start. And number 11, white black grind.
Though that means I left one of the two color pairs off here, which two color pair is so bad that I didn't even put it on here.
That's tough. I guess blue green is technically not on here. Like, you,
yeah,
just have
it's, Teemer. It's just Teemer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Blue-green, yeah, you're rarely Teemer. You're splashing some red.
Yeah, for sure. Poor one out for, I mean, black white pulling up the rear there, but it definitely has a soft spot in my heart. But like, the fact that this is one of the first times, or maybe the first time, that we've had so many wedges on this list really speaks to that bleed we're talking about, like the archetype bleed, or even just the how strong the energy in a wedge and Eldrazi in a wedge stuff was, really just led us to feel like, not like some of these were streamlined two color archetypes, but really just like, no, one of some of the best things to do were just go straight Jeskai. I mean, not straight Jeskai. You're not doing like 666 mana base, but you're going to be representing all three colors there.
Number 12, red and green were the best colors, with black bringing up the rear, but drafting a synergistic deck mattered way more than being in the best colors.
Yeah, drafting a synergistic open deck mattered way more than being in the best colors. Like, you're not just, you know, I feel like some of the discourse around, like, we just reviewed the Pro Tour draft, some of the discourse around those drafts, our takes on those drafts, felt like a lot of people just like digging their heels in for something that I didn't like. I don't think it's such a stark difference to how you draft something like OTJ. And we just, you bring up Bonnie Paul a lot because that's the poster child for just like raw power. But like, you're not starting your draft with Bonnie Pauls. There just aren't really Bonnie Pauls. Like, there's maybe you get an Ajani, or like there's like a couple cheap white rares and mythics that are really strong that would make me go, I want to dig my heels in for this. But beyond that, like, the stuff that's really powerful, if you think about what's at the top of the heap of the game and hand win rate, 17 lands power rankings, you know, like, Amped Raptor can be a not great card in your deck. And yeah. So it's not like you're starting your draft with Amped Raptor and going, I'm in, I'm digging my heels in for red energy. Because if that's not there, you're just missing the boat on something else. And that's just, like, way more important than under, like, you want to understand what those, like, air quotes raw power good cards are, but you have to understand that like the format is sort of built on those, and it's more important that you get to grab the ones that belong in the deck that your seat is open for.
Yes.
Number 13, the cheap gold commons, especially late in pack one, were huge hooks into their respective archetypes. And the cheap ones we're talking about are the two mana ones. So Conduit Goblin, Riddlegate Gargoyle, Sneaky Snacker, and Cranial Ram, and for my money, Watchdog, not so much.
Yeah, you could even make the case for Cranial Ram, too.
Not so much.
I think the first three, the Goblin, the Gargoyle, and the Snacker, I think are definitely the three best.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, those were fun cards to draft, fun cards to pivot for. I think it was a really cool that those were all two drops and really only worked in their deck. Like, in a format where there was so much bleed, mm-hmm. there was also power that was cheap at common that rewarded you for not bleeding, like mm-hmm. that rewarded you for being streamlined two color. And the other crazy thing is, are these commons are better than a lot of the uncommons, right? As far as signposts go.
I mean, I want to say like almost, not almost all, but most of them are like, so let's get to the list. We're blowing it. We've got the list coming up for the commons, and then we can talk about them in conjunction with their respective uncommons.
Number 14. The official Lords of Limited Common signpost power rankings. Number one, duh, Writhing Chrysalis.
Number two, Conduit Goblin.
Number three, Riddlegate Gargoyle.
Number four, Sneaky Snacker.
Number five, Cranial Ram.
Number six, Faithful Watchdog.
Number seven, Snapping Voidcraw.
Number eight, Obstinate Gargoyle.
Number nine, Cyclops Superconductor.
And number 10, Expanding Ooze. So like, I mean, Chrysalis is better than Titan's Vanguard, but Titan's Vanguard is nuts. Conduit Goblin is worse than Scurry of Gremlins.
But Scurry of Gremlins is insane. That card is so much fun to play with.
But like,
horrible to play against.
The rest of them, I feel like the commons are better.
I mean, blue-white definitely, blue-black definitely, red-black yes, green-white definitely, blue-green yes. Black-white, the Gargoyle is definitely better than Undo Knot Master, but neither one is great. Cyclops Superconductor is probably better.
Than Generatorium. Yeah.
Better than Is It Generatorium and Expanding Ooze. Who cares
not
about Black-green?
Not better than...
Not better than Winding Constrictor. Does that card just fall flat?
That's what I said 3 weeks ago.
I mean, what happened to it? It's so powerful.
It's kind of my memory of Winding Constrictor. You did just call it that.
I just called it Winding Constrictor. I don't know what the name of the card is.
Cursed Wombat. It's kind of my memory of Winding Constrictor from Aether Revolt. Like, that Winding Constrictor was such a powerhouse in Constructed that I always wanted to make it work, but I felt like everything just had to go so perfectly right, and you had to draw, I mean, it's different than the Wombat, but like you had to draw Constrictor in your opening hand and have it on turn two and have it survive, and like, it's just not gonna happen. That's the deal. Anyway, number 15, removal was important, but synergy was more important. And the removal was plentiful too.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, take Galvanic Discharge as a synergistic type of removal. That was the best kind, also very efficient. And I think a good way to frame removal is you needed to be able to interact and you wanted to be able to interact, but not at the cost of your own deck functioning. You couldn't glut your deck with removal spells, or you just missed out on the synergy aspects of the format. And popping off with synergy was more important than having the removal, but the best was if you could pop off with synergy while slightly disrupting your opponent's synergy.
Well, and that goes back to like there not being like Bonnie Paul. There aren't aces in the hole in the format, right? That you have to be able to answer. There are certainly some like things, but like, yeah, you want to like kill the Royal Cartographer before they get to six energy, but like they already have five energy once you kill the Royal Cartographer. So like something else is coming that's gonna be bad and use that energy too. And so like, yes, you need removal, but it's not the be all end all for your decks.
Number 16, Modern Horizons 3 was unique in that you could have two halves of an archetype that actually played well together. I think you were doing this quite a bit more than me.
This just like, with high synergy formats like this, this is usually a recipe for disaster. You get a deck tech and you see, oh, you have half energy cards and half Eldrazi cards. What happened? But you actually could, like, one of the really cool things was there were, like, little small interactions you could find that, like, glued these halves together. Or, like, the Jund enter the battlefield, leave the battlefield deck that I love so much. Like, working with Molten Gatekeeper and Marionette Apprentice to just, like, and then the Eldrazi being the glue, the spawns being the glue to bind those. Or, like, Jeskai proliferated. So you're proliferating counters, but you're also proliferating energy. Like, you had, it just goes back to, like, there were ways to cook. And one of those ways to cook was to figure out how you could marry two different archetypes together.
Love it.
Number 17, knowing whether you were going after synergy or raw stats was important. I'll think about your, you know, emphasis on and your distinction of red white energy versus red white aggro. And I think we already talked about like green white aggro versus like green white plus one counters. And like those aggro decks caring more about raw stats and the energy decks caring more about energy production and utilization. It's a slight difference, but you really have to know that difference.
Absolutely. And a lot of that was on the back of Area Auxiliary, right? Those just aggro decks, because that 4-mana 3/3 fire that dumped two counters on, like going 2/3 Area Auxiliary was a great way to win a game of Modern Horizons 3.
Absolutely.
Number 18, MH3 draft is about finding the ceilings of the cards you draft.
Yeah, and that goes back to my point about I think game and hand win rate really didn't tell the whole picture of the format in this respect. You know, like Malevolent Rumble, as we'll chat about in just a second, it's a great card. Its stats are extremely juiced, I think, based on the cards surrounding it and based on the things it can do in conjunction with a Writhing Chrysalis, that like I don't think I want to be picking it at the power level that it seems to be garnering from those things. And so you have to be able to sift through those things, certainly the data there if you want to, but just sift through the packs and thinking about like, where am I going to actually get the most bang for my buck out of my picks? And Malevolent Rumble, you know, you said this a few weeks ago and I sort of poo-pooed it, but there's truth there where you're like, it's as good as the rest of your deck is.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I talked about this train wreck draft I had earlier today. I ended up with a Propagator Drone, which is a very good card, mm-hmm. the thing that gives your tokens evolve, in my green-white +1/+1 counter beatdown deck, where so it was had a bear. Absolutely no synergy. It was like a 2/2. And I ended up running it because I was short playables, but that's an absolute disaster. Like, I was as far away from that card's ceiling as it was possible to be.
But now I'm thinking like, oh, is there a way to do a cross archetype synergy of Propagator Drone tokens with +1/+1 counter matters? Let's get in the lab.
Maybe, but go. you gotta have the green cards that make the spawn tokens, and I had none of those.
Right, right.
It's just in the wrong home.
Number 19, the official Lords of Limited top common of each color. In white, we have the aforementioned Counter Dumper Area Auxiliary.
In blue, Tune the Narrative.
In black, Wither and Bloom, though I do want to make a pull for a card we'll talk about a little later.
Which is...
No spoilers.
Oh, no spoilers.
You gotta get there. You gotta get there.
Red, we've got Galvanic Discharge.
That feels like the clearest. I mean, that and Area Auxiliary are the clearest. And in green, we will put Malevolent Rumble. We will bow to the Data Lords and put it there. I do think it's great. It's hard for me. I think Eldrazi Repurposer is great too, but I think Rumble gets the nod.
And Evolution Witness and the green removal spell that like deals damage. And if you have an Eldrazi, you gain 3.
For all my talk about commons not mattering, green's commons were great and green's uncommons were mostly abysmal. Like, there's a steep drop off after the good ones.
Yeah. Number 20, the fetch lands do a lot in the format, but they aren't super high picks early on in the draft.
Yeah, these and the MDFCs have that sort of thing of like, you want to know what you're doing first and then take the lands appropriately, but you don't want to. It's not sort of like old cube days where you're just like, oh, well, I'll just take a land and delay the decision or whatever. You don't really want to be doing that. But what do the fetch lands do? Well, they splash, air quotes, your colorless mana requirements, right? Because they can tap for colorless mana before you crack them.
They help you splash colors.
They're Evolving Wilds variants, but can tap the turn you play it, which is huge.
There's also sacrifice synergies in the format that care about you sacrificing non-token permanents,
mm-hmm.
and the lands trigger those things. These lands were absolutely phenomenal. One of my favorite parts of the format, it was odd that they weren't higher picks somehow because they did so much. One cautionary tale, I would say, if you load up on them and you're only running like 7 to 8 basics, you really did start to feel the, okay, I need red and I have red cards in my hand, but I got to crack this fetch land and delay that by a turn.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't even put it on this list because I always forget, but you can cycle them. Like it doesn't come up often.
Who does that?
I do it. I've done it.
I've done it too.
You know when you discover a new binge-worthy show or a song that you play on repeat or a strategy to bust a new limited format wide open and you have to share it with your friends so they can experience just how awesome it is?
That's kind of what it feels like when you discover that Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's such an awesome deal, there's no way you can keep it to yourself.
Friends don't let friends overpay for wireless. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan and switch to Mint Mobile.
Mint Mobile is here to rescue you and your squad with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month.
Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/LOL.
That's mintmobile.com/LOL. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/LOL. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Slower speed above 40 gigabyte on the unlimited plan. Additional taxes and fees and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Number 21, the fetch lands also powered up Landfall, which was a really cool sub-theme in the format. Some powerful, powerful Landfall cards. Chief among them, Reckless Pyrosurfer, the 1-red 2/2 haste Landfall. It gets battle cry when it attacks, and you could... That's the first time I realized I like
that it's stacked.
That it's stacked, and that's what fetch lands did. My mind kind of like I was doing the like big explosion. Like
that's another thing that we haven't talked about is if you're coming back to this format for the first time, like there were so many aha moments.
Yeah.
Like, that were very, very cool in week one or week two of the format that you kind of took for granted later on, but was really cool exploring the format.
Like you took for granted that they still existed, right? Because they still exist. Like I've had them in the last week, like Essence Reliquary plus Utter Insignificance being like, oh, you can do that. Like you get to exile the thing and then pick it up when it's on the stack. Like there's a lot of little like, whoa. And you might even not realize it when you're drafting and then you get to deck building. You go, oh, these work together. You don't realize it until you're playing and then you go, whoa, those work together, you know? So, but Landfall is definitely part of it.
Number 22, the MDFCs are great, but also like the fetch lands don't send you down a direction. You're not picking your MDFCs and then deciding your blue green because you have the Drowner of Truth, which is the blue green MDFC. You just naturally, if you find the right lane, you kind of collect some MDFCs of those colors along the way.
And number 23, the best MDFCs were the highly situational ones that could help you win a game or be super impactful, right? Less so the sort of, you know, removal spells, but really the swingy things that you might not main deck, like even Witch Enchanter. I mean, Witch Enchanter, you might actually just main deck a 4-mana 2-2 blow up an artifact or enchantment.
We were talking about removal not mattering. Honestly, artifact and enchantment interaction might have mattered more than creature removal.
Isn't that crazy? So
yeah. I mean, there were just so many great build arounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, engine-y cards that you're just like, if you stopped that, like Essence Reliquary we keep talking about, but many cards like that where you're like, I actually have to stop that because I can stop all the other pieces, but you'll just play more of those pieces and still have your engine.
Right, or things like Sundering Eruption or Suppression Ray to stop the board stalls. And honestly, some of the enchantments that you would never run as a card, but if it's a split land, heck yeah, like your opponent landing Glasswing Grace or Strength of the Harvest to make something huge, those were really cool ways that games turned around.
Big agree, yeah.
Notice I said your opponent because I never played either of those two cards, but was on the receiving end of that fair amount. Number 24, Red-Black Artifacts relies on the cheap artifacts to get the curve going. You really wanted your refurbished familiars as cheap as possible constantly. And I think Pterodon was a big part of that in the black decks. You really wanted to go 1, 2, 3 and just vomiting your hand. So important in the red-black deck, because if you were slow, you just lost to better cards.
Yeah, like you just wanted your curve to be Aetherium Terramander into the Charge Bug into maybe another 2-drop plus familiar. Like that would just be the dream. Number 25, Suppression Ray is not sleep. And I am angry about that. And I just needed to air my grievances on the podcast.
Me also. I think we both figured this out around the same time. Somebody somebody pointed out on stream to me. I was streaming on Arena and they were like, wow, feels bad that you're abusing the Arena bug. And I was like, what bug? What are we talking about? Because it lets you, Suppression Ray still lets you tap down, lock down creatures that were already tapped. But because it says something like tap X creatures.
No, it says tap all creatures your opponent controls. And then you can pay any amount of energy for cards tapped this way.
This way, yeah. And the this way means you only get to put the ones to sleep that Suppression Ray tapped. So if they were already tapped, you can't lock them down, which makes it significantly worse, but still good. I mean, it does still end a board stall if you've got blue in an Eldrazi deck or something.
Sure. It's horrible templating and makes me mad.
Number 26, Secret Reach is back, thanks to some terrible templating on cards like Writhing Chrysalis and Petrifying Meddler, but there was just a wall of text and then the word Reach randomly at the bottom of the card.
I mean, I kind of wonder if the Reach icon on Arena was in anticipation of this terrible templating.
You mean the giant bow and arrow?
Yeah, like they had to put that on here because otherwise, like, there would be so many people mistakenly attacking their flyers into these cards.
Yeah.
The other wild thing is that the word reach is not like both of these cards have the word reach at the bottom or the top. One of them has it at the bottom and one of them has it in the middle. It's just completely deranged. Okay, we get to my card here. Number 27, Accursed Marauder is way better than it looks. And for me, is the best black common, but as I was telling you before the show, I think that's bad intel for our listeners. but when we're thinking about floor versus ceiling, Wither and Bloom, higher floor, Accursed Marauder, much higher ceiling. And like, I think has a pretty high floor too.
I agree. I used to think it was greater garbage. We've talked about this a little bit. I now think it's either good or great. It's never been bad against me, and usually I am cursing the same way I was cursing when my opponents played Hoarding Ogre on the play against me in AFR.
It's bad when your opponent has the same plan as you. Like if your opponent is playing like Retrofitted Transmogrant on turn one and your plan is like, wait, I'm doing that and then playing a Cursed Marauder, like that's when it's bad. But other than them being sort of air quotes prepared for it, it's never bad.
Yes. Number 28, Molten Gatekeeper really tied the room together in the Jund decks.
This is, I mean, we've got a different winner for clunky looking over performer, but like, this was such a huge early mover up, but a huge mover up for me in the early days, just being like, yo, this card is great. Like, it's so gluey.
Yes. 2 in a red, 2/3. And whenever another creature enters the battlefield in your control, it deals damage to an opponent. And
Unearth. The
kicker is it's got Unearth. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why does it have
for more?
Yeah. Just great. Let's get some awards out there. Number 29, the Golden Egg Award goes to Smelted Charge Bug. I mean,
you love to see it. The little bug that could.
Yeah. 1 in a red, 1/3 menace artifact. Comes in with 2 energy. When it attacks, you can pay an energy. And if you do, another attacking creature gets +1/+0. So. And menace. I think one of my favorite things about this card is that, like, it has keyword bad, too. Like,
somehow,
you're just like, I can't kill that. But, like, you kind of have to in those aggro.
You
kind of
have to. It does so much.
Yeah, really love that card.
Number 30, the Imperial Oath Award for clunky looking over performer goes to Glimpse the Impossible.
2 in a red sorcery, exile the top 3 cards of your library. You can play them until the end of the turn, and for every card you don't at the at your end step, you make a 0/1 spawn. This card's sweet. Like, somehow, like, every mode is terrifying, right? Like, it just looks so, like, when I read this, I was like, I can't imagine I'm gonna be playing this card, but it slots in so many different spots of different games of different decks. It's really, really good. And so, like, it's not clunky in the way that Imperial Oath was in 6 mana. Like, it's only 3 mana, but sometimes you do actually just want to fire this off on 3 and get 3 spawns. Sometimes this is ancestral for you later in the game. And, like, every mode in between is also somehow quite powerful.
Yeah, it's interesting in that I would have thought that you would have had to put it in a very low curve deck.
Right.
And you don't really.
No.
Like, my eyes were kind of open. That was the mindset I had. And I was watching an LSV video where he was like, yeah, Glimpse is an Eldrazi card. And I was like, what? How is Glimpse an Eldrazi card? And then I started putting it in an Eldrazi decks. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, I get it. This is a draw 3 because you have so much mana floating around.
The other thing that I always forget about it is that the cards go to the yard. They don't stay exiled. And that is also extremely important.
Yes. Yeah. All pieces are important of Glimpse the Impossible. And it does a lot.
Number 31, in a format... Number 31, in a format of seemingly infinite chump blockers, Trample was king. Looking at you, Colossal Dreadmask and Nyxborn Hydra being big problems if unanswered. Dreadmask for me more than... I felt like I could sort of usually maneuver a way to deal with the Hydra if it was a problem. Dreadmask felt like... I was like, what do I do? It's Dreadmaw, which is annoying. And then, and why is the re-equip cost cheaper than the cast cost? That's also annoying. It was just hard to deal with.
Yeah, Trample and Flying, both very important in this format. Number 32, Modal Disenchants were highly desirable. Think Collective Resistance, Thraben Charm, Siege Smash, the creatures that did it. We talked about the Witchkeeper, Angel of Ruins, aptly named. That card ruined my deck so often.
That's really funny. Yeah, I think, and just word to the wise, like, I always tried to shoot the moon with Collective Resistance. Like, just take your 1/1 if it's good for you. Just, I'm just speaking from experience. Like, you don't have to line it up for a time where you also are protecting a creature. Like, just kill the thing.
Yep.
Number 33, the best thing for Shrieking Drake to pick up was itself. This is the single blue 1/1 flyer. ETBs picks up a creature. I mean, re-triggering ETBs for Metastatic Evangel, your Dreamtide Whale for double spelling cheaply, that could just double spell on its own. Guide of Souls, someone did that to me at the RCQ. They had Guide of Souls with Shrieking Drake. This was my opponent who, I talked about this in the video that I made for the RCQ I went to. But so they had Guide of Souls early game 1 and early game 2, and then game 3 they go, Plains, tap. Untap. No, I'm just kidding. And I was like, that's that's good content right there. So shout out to that person. But yeah, the Shrieking Drake had some cool, again, like, that's just a cool high ceiling kind of card.
Number 34, speaking of ETBs, Essence Reliquary is the real deal if you build around it. What doesn't this card do?
truly. So you, I mean, just on face value, like what we maybe sort of thought when we saw it in preview season, like, yeah, it'll be kind of cute. You can re-trigger your ETB effects, but oh no.
I had not put together it lets you pick up MDFCs,
nope.
Which is insane.
Nope, didn't pick that up, I think, until we like live on the podcast, like our third episode. It sort of, air quotes, lets you hit land drops when you're missing them, right? You can tap the land for mana, pick it up with Reliquary, replay it.
It just shuts down all of your opponent's aura-based removal, which is awesome.
It lets you chump attack with stuff, right? Like attack, you know, three small things into one big thing and then just pick up the one thing they block.
It lets you pick up sagas, which is super sweet. Saga locks with Essence Reliquary are one of my favorite things to do in the format.
Because you also get, because the thing about Essence Reliquary is it's instant speed on your turn. So you get chapter three to pop off if you want and then can pick it up in response.
Yeah, usually it's been chapters one and two that I've been after, because chapters one is the one you want most on the white and the blue ones, which I think are the coolest ones with it.
Yeah, card is excellent. Number 35, Warren Soul Trader plus Marionette Apprentice could end the game in a hurry. So Soul Trader is the 2 and a black 3/3, sack another creature, or pay a life, sack another creature, and you get a treasure. And Marionette Apprentice cares about creatures leaving and artifacts leaving. So you're just getting ping, 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 ping for no mana. It ends the game pretty quick.
I was just talking to my brother before recording this, and he was telling me about a sweet blue-black brew he had with the soul. He had a board with Soul Trader, Apprentice, and Nadir's Nightblade, which is the 1/3 that cares about tokens leaving, and Reform. And he said he 20'd his opponent in one turn with like sacking the Reform tokens and then the treasure tokens. It was awesome.
That is gnarly. Wow, that's so sick. Shout out to your brother.
Number 36, Spawn Gang Commander plus Gift of the Viper equals Machine Gun.
It's not Death Touch until end of turn. It's a Death Touch counter. And so your Spawn Gang Commander...
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize that.
Your Spawn Gang Commander just has Death Touch. And then chucking any Eldrazi at something is just... That shock turns into lethal. Number 37... I think, I'm going to make a bold statement, I think every single common in the set is playable. And I don't mean desirable, but there are definitely like cards at the end of a format. Like sometimes I will scroll through the, like, you know, we, for 50 takes, you just scroll through the full visual card image gallery, whatever.
Yeah.
And I will be like, man, never cast that card or put that in my deck like 4 weeks ago. I never want to put that in my card deck again. Like the lowest game in hand win rate cards are at common are Corrupted Shapeshifter. That's a 4-mana 3/3 or 4-mana blue card that can be a 3/3 flyer, 2/5 Vigier, or an 0/12. Gravedig, Obstinate Gargoyle. Like these cards aren't great by any stretch, but like you're playing them. And like
Corrupted Shapeshifter is pretty horrible.
Corrupted Shapeshifter is a sideboard card in my mind. So if that's fair. Yeah, yeah. The, like 2/5 lines up like really well against aggro decks.
Okay. All right.
You know nothing of what you speak
of. I know
of,
nothing of that. You've never played Best of One in this format, yeah. Which is a testament to how good this format is. Because I didn't really get tired of Best of One.
So maybe Corrupted Shapeshifter, but like everything else, it's a pretty testament, and it's stark contrast to the uncommons. And I guess it's just like there's now 100 uncommons, and so there's going to be some clunkers, but boy howdy are there some clunkers.
Number 38, the official Lords of Limited Energy payoff power rankings. Number 1, Scurry of Gremlins.
I do think Scurry of Gremlins, if we're talking about energy payoffs, is better than number 2, Amped Raptor.
I agree. Number 3, Unstable Amulet.
Number 4, Royal Cartographer.
Number 5, Phyrexian Ironworks.
Number 6, you really turned me around on this card, Bespoke Battle Wagon.
Number 7, Is It Generatorium.
Yeah, it's so hard to use 4 energy in a given turn. Like, honestly, the best mode of Generatorium is adding more energy for your other cards, but like, you also have to have everything go right for that part of it to be good, so... Not a huge fan of that, but a lot of those cards on that list are sweet, and you should look out for them if you're coming back to the format for the first time. Number 39, Solar Transformer was excellent in energy, but also just a great flexible early pick in a format that rewarded finding the right lane, right? So like it was an artifact. If you ended up in artifacts, it tapped for colorless mana repeatedly, which some Eldrazi decks really wanted to be able to do that without sacrificing spawn.
Well, and ramped you from 2 to 4 in the Eldrazi decks, which was also super important.
Exactly. And like, you know, less, your opponents can have less removal for that than your Nightshade Dryad on turn 2 as your 2-mana ramper or whatever. So like Solar Transformer, I thought about like, is it time to expand? You know, in the world of commons don't matter, is it time to finally expand the Golden Egg and the Imperial Oath Award to uncommons as well?
Never.
Because Solar Transformer is a poster child for that kind of an award.
Yeah, and it also helped you splash. It was a great card.
Right.
Number 40, the Cycle of Sagas were a cool addition to the format, some more than others. So yeah. In number one slot, we had Rowl and the Implicit Maze, which I still somehow have only cast like twice, and it was highly mediocre for me. But I do understand and recognize that it is a very powerful card.
Yeah, scooping up a bunch of Eldrazi spawn is gas. Well, so is this exiling card. Big cards. Johnny Fells the Godsire is excellent.
Ooh, yeah, Johnny Fells the Godsire is great. One of the coolest cards to combo with Essence Reliquary. I got ranched by Rowl in the Implicit Maze in the Arena Open. I had my day one deck, which had 6 Riddlegate Gargoyles in it. Oh. And my opponent had a Rowl in the Implicit Maze. And like, what am I supposed to do against that? Like, it's so horrible.
That is wild. Yeah, they just play Gwindu.
Yeah, for sure. Number 3, Tamiyo Meets the Story Circle. This one was cool, like, yeah. On the less good end of things. Like, definitely the red and the white were tier 1, blue kind of tier 1.5, and then the green and the black, Hunger Tide Rises and Creation of Avacyn were just both near unplayable. Black near definitely unplayable. Was. Green getting real close there, too.
I don't know, my opponent had Creation of Avacyn on turn 3 and went and found Ulamog.
Oh, yeah.
And then put that into play on turn 5, so.
Okay.
That was pretty good. I was like, oh, all right, I see you.
Can they take like 10 damage or something, though? Don't you lose life equal to its mana value?
No, don't you? You just lose 3. Just as, if it's a creature, you lose 3 life. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it's not Dark Confidant. Number 41, Nesting Grounds is better than any of the rare utility lands. I wanted to like make this take be utility lands are dead. But then I saw Nesting Grounds. I was like, nah, Nesting Grounds still kind of does it for me. Like, it's pretty sweet. You get to like moving +1/+1 counters for all the like when a counter gets on a thing like Evolution Witness or even the 5-mana 4/4 that lets you draw 2, lose 2. Taking like getting to just repeatedly do a chapter of a saga. Like I just had like a 2-1 a Johnny Fells the Godsire factory with Nesting Grounds in play. Getting to have Obstinate Gargoyle persist and then move that -1/-1 counter onto your opponent's creatures was really cool. Nesting Grounds got there for me.
Yes. Number 42, please do not put Barbarian Ring or Cephalid Coliseum in your decks.
Like, true, like, I don't know how to make this PSA any louder, larger. Like, I don't understand. They're like, well, I have to put Coliseum in my deck so that I have another way to draw 3. I'm like, do you also have something that is going to mitigate the 4 life you're going to take from this thing? Like, this is terrible.
You gotta be pretty desperate.
Number 43, it wasn't apparent at first, but it is now. Path of Annihilation, many greater signs better than Kozilek's Unsealing.
Yeah, not close to close. Path of Annihilation was the coolest Eldrazi build around, I think.
Yeah. I mean, is it even a... I mean, you have to build around it in that it goes in an Eldrazi deck.
Yeah, but other than that, it was just a great card.
Such a good card. So crazy, because like Kozilek's Unsealing looked really awesome, but the fact that you didn't get anything up front, really, like, that's going to be a big takeaway for me in thinking about these build arounds. Like, just not getting anything up front is tough.
Number 44, Utter Insignificance is one of the best blue removal spells we've seen in a while.
Yeah, so the one in a blue flash aura turns the thing into a 1/1, loses all abilities, and then 2 in a colorless, exile it. Really good.
It was really good. And I think, you know, we were talking about is Kazmina's Transmutation or whatever. Did they finally do it? They did it here. Look at this card. This is the best variant of turn something into a 1/1 with no abilities we've ever seen, for sure.
Yeah.
And I really was not on this card until playing against it a bunch in the Arena Open. It really impressed me there, and I've kind of moved it up in my pick order since.
Nice. Number 45, pour one out for Decree of Justice. Power creep is real. How do you feel? How do you feel about the D grade? I mean, it's an F, right? Like, you just don't play it.
No, it's a D. You play it sometimes.
You don't.
You just play it sometimes.
He's still on the hook, folks. He's still.
You play it sometimes. The crazy thing is, though, I was telling you about this beforehand. I am sorting through a bunch of Magic the Gathering cards, like years and years and years of draft decks and pre-releases and whatever. And I saw like old Decree of Justice from the OG set while I was going through some cards before the show.
I bet that deck was really good.
I bet it was great.
It was in.
A little astral slide going on.
Ooh. Love to see it.
Number 46, build arounds that didn't quite get there. Muster the Departed. So this is the make a 1/1 flying spirit. And then if a creature died during your turn, Morbid, you could copy a creature token you controlled. You could populate.
Tough to have this and Decree of Justice back to back. Am I allowed to say I told you so?
I was telling you about this, I think, before we recorded. No, maybe I said it on the podcast. This Esper deck I have with Essence Reliquary. I have Muster the Departed in there as well. Because I've got some sweet sacrifice synergies with the Chthonia Nightmare in there, as well as a couple of the black Sakathing draw too. So Muster the Departed is getting there in that deck for me. But I would say build around with high levels of caution. Muster the Departed, yeah, is
nice build around D grade there.
Well, but I can also pick it up with Essence Reliquary, like a spirit every turn.
I get it. Yeah, but 3 mana for a 1/1 spirit every turn is highly, highly medium. Another card that's highly medium is Nadir's Nightblade, the 1 and a black 1/3, or the 2 and a black 1/3 that cares about tokens leaving the battlefield and draining your opponent. Like, yeah, you can do it, but like all the other things have to go right, and then you get the Nightblade. It's not you're taking Nightblade and then trying to make it work.
And similarly, Monstrous Vortex, this is the thing that lets you cascade if you had power 5 or greater, I think, ETB. It just did not do it.
No, not at all. Number 47, Propagator Drone could be explosive. Thanks to, and I missed this early, Eldrazi making spawn tokens on cast, right? So like you cast the thing, the cast trigger happens, it makes the spawn, whether it's Chrysalis or Repurposer, then the creature comes into play, and then you're getting the evolve trigger, which is really cool.
Right. And a lot of them make 2 tokens. So like if you go drone into make 2 tokens into make 2 tokens, then there's 2/2/3s and 2/1/2s, it's really tough.
Oh yeah. That board is a mess.
Number 48, some build around or weird rares that might seem sketchy that are actually just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you can think this is sketchy, though it does play out more explosively than it looks. Felia, Exuberant Shepherd, the 1 and a white flash. Whenever it attacks, it's not when it comes into play. Whenever it attacks, you get to exile another creature. Doesn't have to be non-token. You can just kill a big token that your opponent has. So you exile a creature, and then it comes back end of turn. If you exiled your own creature, Felia gets a +1/+1 counter. So like, you just had so many possibilities with this card. Like, just beat down, clear out a blocker, great. Kill a token, rebuy an ETB effect on your own side of the board. Like, the sky was the limit here.
The first time I read the card, though, I was like, well, this is a 2/2. How often is it going to have attacks? Like, that was my thought. But it just does so much work. Card's incredible.
But it also, sometimes you'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll trade. And I'll get something out. Like the floor of it was often like, yeah, I'll like blink this thing, get in with some other damage, and then I trade Felia. That's fine.
Yep. Next up, we've got Chthonian Nightmare. I thought this card was going to be borderline unplayable, and it is now one of my favorite cards to play with.
Yeah, I haven't really played with it myself, but it has been busted. Like, so hard to beat.
Yeah, it's recurring nightmare with energy, and you get energy in chunks of 3, but it only costs 2. It's way cheaper than recurring nightmare. So I've had turns where I replayed Chthonian Nightmare like 2 to 3 times in a turn and sacked Eldrazi spawn to get back other real cards. It's just very powerful.
Aether Revolt. I've had the pleasure of having double Aether Revolt in my deck in play. This is the 2 red enchantment that lets you deal damage every time you make energy to any target equal to the amount of energy. Plus, if you trigger Revolt on your turn, it adds 2 damage to non-combat damage you deal. Just powerful, busted.
It's never worked for me, but I've seen it be great.
Yeah.
Echoes of Eternity, this is the three colorless, colorless, colorless that is an Eldrazi build around. It doubles your Eldrazi spells as well as and their triggers. It's just ridiculous. Yeah, I think once this hits the battlefield, the next Eldrazi your opponent casts, the game is generally over.
Where did you land on that counter spell, the like counter a colorless spell or a triggered ability that was a single blue and then had like, was it replicate for a colorless? So basically, effectively, blue, one in a blue, you could counter an Eldrazi and its cast trigger.
That was what, Consigned to Memory? Is that the name
of
it?
Yeah, there you go. Shout out to you for remembering card names.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it is a very good sideboard card. And I think if you have enough card draw, you don't feel terrible about main decking it.
Mm-hmm. The Eldrazi mythics are all pretty castable spawn tokens. Yeah, I mean, I've seen them all cast. I've seen Ulamog, Kozilek, and Emrakul cast multiple times.
And lastly, Invert Polarity. This is the blue-blue-red counter spell. That just looks like something totally weird when you read it. It's got coin flip on the card, but it's awesome. It's either counter their spell and 50% chance you steal their spell and just basically win the game on the spot. It's really good.
I did not really, like, I had written it off basically because I just write off any card that has flip a coin on it. But you're right. The fact that it's counter, like, it's counter spell slash, 50% of the time, counterspell that's Fractured Identity for 2 mana cheaper. It's wild. Number 49, Masters Formats coming to Arena was awesome. More, please.
Yeah, this was great. I mean, if this hadn't been on Arena, we would not have been able to devote the amount of content we did to it.
Right, because, like, we probably wouldn't have played it that much. Our, like, the listener base certainly wouldn't have been playing it that much. Like, in the past, these formats have been less accessible, especially because of the price point. And so the fact that, like, this is the same, cost the same to draft on Arena as any other set, that's a huge win.
Number 50, MH3 was a very cool draft format that rewarded you for exploring how to maximize the best cards.
It's a very politic way to sum up the takes and the format without any of my negative thoughts about the set. But yeah, I agree. Like, cooking, floor versus ceiling, build arounds, understanding, like, figuring out your lane and pivot points. Like, there's a lot to like, and certainly a lot of skill testing stuff for this draft format.
What are you going away from this format not liking it? I'm confused here. You seemed so excited while we were doing these 50 takes about all the cross synergy and
acting.
All the ding. No, get out of here. This format was really good.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, fun stuff. I just, like, don't know if I know how to win in the format. Like, I know how to, like, make stuff happen, but I'm not sure, like, I've come away with this feeling like I know how to win in the format.
Hashtag get good.
I can't. I can't do it.
On that note, we will wrap it up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
I like that the last note we're leaving our listeners with is Ethan can't win. Speaking of, you can find all of our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. Links to our episode backlogs, where I have felt like I could win in some formats. There's our Twitch streams, respectively. There's our YouTube channel. There's our tier lists. We'll have a tier list in the coming weeks for Bloomburrow once all that stuff is sorted out. Our merch, courtesy of TeePublic, our Patreon page, all of that at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer.
Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.